Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody. It's Teresa and America.
Hi, guys.
We're back at In the Open, and today we have a special guest, Matt, who comes from our MHA of Oklahoma affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Matt?
Yes, ma'am. Proud affiliate.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, give our audience a quick intro.
Sure. So my name's Matt Gleason. I'm just turned 40 this week. And
happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. And so I went to journalism school at Oklahoma State University, graduated, got hired by the local newspaper in Tulsa, in the Tulsa World, worked there for 8 years. I was a feature writer. And as you guys know, newspaper industries laying people off left and right. So I was laid off almost 9 years ago in May, and it was the worst day and the best day because within a month, I was working for MHA here in Oklahoma. It has been a blessing every single day. I handle our media relations. I do social and help with our advocacy and fundraising. You know, we're a nonprofit, so we have lots of hats. I have a whole rack full. But what I'm most proud of, and the reason that I'm so happy to be here, is that I host a podcast for, it's called Mental Health Download for our organization. And we're a weekly podcast. You can find it on the same places you find In the Open. And so I actually interviewed Teresa, and we're getting huge feedback from it. Teresa is so interesting and insightful and just goofy and fun. And I think we end the podcast, Teresa, saying that we're going to go out and be badass mental health ninjas. So I'm proud to be a badass mental health ninja with you.
So we talk about that a lot. Our podcast is really focused on people struggling with things together. So, Matt, we've invited you here to talk about the topic, My Mind is Racing. Mm-hmm. And so outside of your professional work, sure. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your specific mental health journey?
Sure. I did not get a diagnosed as having depression until about a year or so ago, but I know that I should have been I'm on Prozac. I'm proud of Prozac. I would be the president of the Prozac fan club. It changed my life because seriously, like I've struggled with depression since probably before even I was a teenager. I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am just so lucky to have survived, you know, some of the really dark things that I felt inside and didn't feel like I could talk to anybody. And as far as racing thoughts go, my racing thoughts were always negative, always dwelling on what I've done wrong, what I'm going to do wrong, why I am horrible, why I'm a horrible human being, even though I was a kid. And those thoughts haunted me. And I finally got into therapy many years ago. And my therapist said, look, you have to do something to combat these. He called them harpies. I've used that before, and people were like, herpes? No, harpies.
It is like herpes.
But I believe those were like mythological creatures that just plagued people. The way I explain it now is those negative thoughts are like mosquitoes. You don't know where they're coming from, but they're attacking you and you feel completely helpless. And I felt completely helpless against these thoughts, and I could not, and I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about them because I didn't want to tell other people what these horrible thoughts were telling me. You know, it was embarrassing and it was painful, and it was all day, every day. And it wasn't until, I got into therapy that I recognized that there are solutions for this. And then it wasn't until about a year ago where I finally was in a very dark place. I had my brother and sister both died within about a year and a half of each other and went into a really dark depression. And I got on Prozac and it was amazing. The lights came back on. And in that journey, being on Prozac, amazingly, I was in the quiet all of a sudden. Like it was super weird. Like, where are these evil thoughts that keep coming at me? And we'll talk about this, but the two big things that helped me with my racing thoughts were The two M's I always tell people, it's meditation and medication, because I got off Prozac about 3-4 months ago and went directly back into the darkness and could not meditate, could not pray, could not find. I was back in the darkness and I got back on the Prozac and finally I could meditate. So that's kind of been my journey. And what's a blessing working for the MHA here in Oklahoma is I get to share that with like-minded people. You know, we're advocates and we're unafraid to talk about anything. If I was at the Tulsa World newspaper, no one, and on Prozac, no one would know.
Right.
No one would know I was going to therapy. I would have been so afraid of judgment. And I think that would have been the case wherever I worked. But here at MHA, it's just, and I've heard multiple coworkers say, oh my God, it's so nice just to be able to talk about this in the open, right? I mean, I'm sure you guys have had that same experience. And I hope that in the darkness that I went through helps other people.
So let's just start a little bit at the beginning. So yes, America, please. Do you struggle with racing thoughts, or you Dude, are not racing thoughts?
No,
person?
No. Like yesterday, I had these ideas that I was like, dude, what is wrong with me that I cannot physically like stop and just focus, you know? And I think that's been the case for me for the last couple of weeks. And I've been thinking about it, like, what is causing that? And Teresa and I always talk about this idea of having mirrors and, you know, people that can tell you, hey, what's going on? You know, and I have those people in my life, luckily. And then they said to me, like, you know, you have a lot on your plate. You're just not able to focus. And I know you're trying to get stuff done. And Matt, you don't know this, but for me, I'm very task oriented. So not being able to like fully do what I need to do is like such a like bad place for me to be in. So when you talk about like, I'm sorry, Teresa, cut you off, like the mosquitoes. Dude, I never thought about it like that, but it's so like mosquitoes. You're just like, can I just like whack them and they go away?
Right.
But it's not that easy.
It's not.
That's really interesting, America, because that's almost like what I imagine people who struggle with ADHD must feel like when they have racing thoughts. Like, you're so stressed out. You have so many things going on. I know people with ADHD say that they just they see everything in the world all the time. So their focus isn't on any one thing. It's on everything. And that probably feels like what happens when you're also hyper-stressed. Like, you're hyper-vigilant about the world. You're thinking about everything all at the same time. And so your racing thoughts are kind of tied to an inability to focus, right? Like,
completely.
And so that can happen. Yeah. And then for Matt, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that a lot of the way that you had racing thoughts was racing negative thoughts related to depression. Yeah. Do you guys find that there are specific triggers or like things that happen that send you on that? Like, I talk about like I can be fine, and then a moment will happen. Before I did the work, if I felt like I was getting attacked, or if I felt like I did something stupid, my mind would go on my anxiety train. Like, I would be like 0 to 100, here I go, ruminating, asking all the questions, thinking stupid things, like shoulda, woulda, couldas, why didn't I do that? And it just over and over and over at 100 miles an hour, right? Do you find that there are triggers for your negative thoughts?
For me, I remember going into my therapist's office, and he was like, well, when did these thoughts come to you? And it was things like, it was mostly when I had time by myself. I said, I really hate doing the dishes. And my therapist was like, what? I was like, when the water comes on and I'm doing the dishes, that is one of the worst parts of my day, because all of those negative thoughts just, you know, one, I'm having to do dishes, and then I'm being attacked, you know, from the inside. It's just the worst thing. And, or, you know, my drive home from work, where I would ruminate on every single interaction, everything I said, everything I did wrong. You know, driving a car and feeling like the thoughts are right behind me. I mean, and not knowing what to do, and being so grateful to get home to my wife and children who could distract me from my dark thoughts. But then they would come to me right before I went to sleep, and they'd be like, hey, remember us? You suck.
Totally. You're so freaking true. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. You forgot. You suck. That's hilarious and horrible all the same time.
It is.
It's true. It is also true that when we're not distracted and we're left to the quiet, that, yeah, a lot of people talk about struggling with negative thoughts right before bed. And then it's just the entree into insomnia.
So I have a question, though, because Matt, you kind of talked about it when you were sharing your experience a little bit, how like this has been something for you, like from early on, like when you were a kid.
Yeah.
So right now you're talking about things like, you know, as an adult. But when you think back to your experience when you were younger, were there things or situations that pushed you into this place that were just like, okay, here, negative thoughts are just going to come about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was awkward, probably nerdy, didn't have the social skills that I needed, but would try and be rejected. And, you know, I can remember being in fourth grade, and I remember I can feel the depression. You know, I can see my mom driving the car home, and I can feel the depression I felt as a fourth grader and having those thoughts as a fourth grader.
So was it, do you feel like it was the bullying or the isolation, or was it also like, do you have depression that runs in your family?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, definitely. I had horrible acne when I was a teenager, and that was a, you know, that's the worst time to feel completely separated from your peers and to feel ugly and that people don't want to talk to you. And I mean, I have so much that I had to work through a lot of that pain in therapy, and I still have those scars. I mean, I can, you know, on my face still that remind me of, I can remember, you know, a classmate saying, you know, you look really ugly, and just the pain. And that, and so when those negative thoughts would come, it's those kind of things that I can see his face and I can see him saying those words, and just being completely having no shield against it and feeling that almost intensely as the moment that it happened, but I'm an adult, you know, like that was, and just feeling so vulnerable and not knowing what to do.
So why do we think that we go to that place? Like, what is it about mental health problems that racing thoughts, not just negative thoughts, are an issue?
I think it varies for everybody. I mean, I can only speak about myself. When you think about like what Matt's describing, I think about some of the things that we've talked about in the past where, you know, when you were a child, Teresa, you felt like you didn't have friends and things like that. And all of us go through this period where we're awkward, we're figuring ourselves out. If there's something about you that separates you from the rest of like the in quotes little group or whatever, it sucks because you feel like something's definitely wrong with you. And I think when we don't tackle those issues or have like the shields that Matt's kind of talking about to help protect us, and that shield is like a friend, a parent, you know, somebody that's just like, oh, forget them, you know, it's like, doesn't matter. It just becomes like this shadow that just follows you because we don't know how to not push it away.
The concept of pushing, how do you create barriers to the racing thoughts? And because I have to ask if there's a distinction between, we talk about having kind of stupid thoughts all the time, right? Like having a negative thought and the way that we attack ourselves, is it distinct for your experiences than when your mind is racing? So it's not just the quality and the things that you're saying to yourself, but also the pace. Like, does the pace at which you are attacking, I am attacking myself with zeal. Because I think that and this is not something that people talk a lot about, because I don't think most therapists even break down how we think certain types of thoughts and the way that we think certain types of thoughts on a regular basis, right? So like when I think about when my mind is specifically racing down a specific track, it's different sometimes than the way that I also have negative thoughts that I'm beating myself up about that aren't necessarily racing. Is that true?
Yeah, for me it is. There are two distinct highways. that are definitely going to be like ventured down. Because for me, I feel sometimes, and I'm telling you, this is like me yesterday, when I'm driving the car and my mind's going from, oh, look, you have to do this at work. Oh, look, you have to do this for school and you have to do this at home. And, you know, you could be doing this. And I'm just like, oh, my God, yo, like, can you stop? Just stop. And I have to physically like shut it down and just be like, focus on the song that's on the radio right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that's like one highway. Then the other highway is like, oh, you're going to buy that shirt? No. Mm-mm. Have you seen yourself? And, you know, and that's the negative talk. And it's like, why are you even doing this? You shouldn't do that. You know, it's about the worthiness and the value that you think you have. And I think sometimes they intersect at different times. But for me, they function very parallel to one another.
Yeah. I always speak in weird analogies. It's just my thing. So when those racing thoughts are happening, it's like when you are super drunk, and I'm not a drinker, but I've in college and, you know, a handful of times as an adult, when you're super drunk and the room starts spinning and you feel, you know, you have no control over the room spinning. And you know, it's just a very horrible, dark place. But what I've figured out is that I remember if I could just focus on the fan that I'm looking up, staring at from my bed, it helps me find control and I can stop the spinning. That is what meditation has done for me. Meditation is my fan.
So for you, the racing thoughts, are all your negative thoughts racing thoughts, or do you have different paced racing thoughts, like negative thoughts?
Yeah, I think they do have different speeds. Yeah, and then I'm curious, do you guys hear your own, is it your own voice telling you, or is it a separate voice, or is it a voice, or is it just a feeling, or is it just a memory? Like sometimes I'll just get flashes of multiple memories that were painful, you know? Like it's not necessarily like, hey, remember that one time? It's like literally being in that moment, like when that trauma happened, and having just a huge like reel of like the best of the worst of your life flashing.
Yeah.
I hear my own voice. It's just me.
That is interesting. Cause if I'm talking to myself, if my mind is also racing, it is a lot of when I'm yelling at myself, mm-hmm. replaying stories, that is around a specific action my mind races, but not necessarily when I'm just thinking globally about the world, right? So if I'm thinking depressed thoughts about how everything sucks and the world sucks and everybody should die, like those thoughts right. are not racing. They can be ruminating. Like yeah. I think about yeah. them all the time and I get kind of stuck in them, but it doesn't have that same stressed feeling that America is talking about. I think the important thing around having your thoughts is building insight and awareness to the way that your mind works. Mm-hmm. Let's move over to what do we do, right? At least for me, before I can even do meditation, I had to unpack and start to recognize when I was doing dumb things. Like I had to recognize when I was engaging in stupid negative thoughts, when I was engaging in racing thoughts, when I was engaging in anxious thoughts, or, you know, just really being trying to be attentive to the way I was thinking before I could do what America said, which was stop. Did you have to be intentional about it, or were you just naturally recognize that you had to stop?
And then no.
Same for you, Matt.
Let me tell you a conversation that I just had with my mother, because she was like, America, you need to meditate. That's literally what she said. She's like, you have to calm your mind and focus. And, you know, I've been thinking about it for a long time. I was like, dude, why can't you do that? And the only thing that comes to mind is like my ability to sit in one place and just focus and not think about something else. Like, okay, you're going to have to practice that. But yeah, like I always talk about this idea of just telling myself to stop it. Because yeah. otherwise, it just keeps going.
People told me to meditate for years and, you know, just take deep breaths. And the thing that kept me from it is that when I tried to meditate, it was like inviting all those negative thoughts like to come into the room and like get comfortable. And it was horrible. Like I didn't want to be with myself. I didn't want to be in my own head. And that was a huge barrier to meditation. And it wasn't until I actually learned how to properly meditate and got on Prozac that I could kick those guys out of the room.
I don't know. I also had to tell myself to stop, but I found the process of replacing the thoughts really painful. So I remember a time where I had to put benign thoughts, like the ABCs. I had to not – maybe meditation is like this in some ways, right? Not the kind of meditation where you clear your mind, but you focus on a sound or music, or you think about a mantra, a phrase. But I did. I had to – I found that I had to – retrain my brain to go from fast to slow. So I had to tell myself to stop. And then I had to do things like sing a song or count along with breathing to retrain my brain and my body to go from fast to slow. And then, and what was weird, you're right, Matt, is that when I started to do that, I also then recognized how much the anxiety was tied to the depression, because then the ruminating sad thoughts would come in, and then it really in the end didn't get better until I was able to acknowledge the unhealthy and sad, or you know, the depressed voice and the anxious voice, and be able to sit with them so that I could heal from them. That, like, if I had to truncate the last 15 years of hard work. That's what that looks like, right? Like learning to stop, you know, just retraining the body to slow down, and then doing the emotional healing. Like, why do you beat yourself up? Why do you have these particular thoughts? Where do they come from? What medications are you on? And, you know, how do you heal from childhood trauma? Like, that's a lot. I don't know.
It's a
lifelong journey. It's not, I don't
think, you know, it is. Yeah. I know that I will be dealing with this my entire life. And as long as I have, and I feel like I have a handle on it. I always tell people that Prozac, it gave me a foothold in the darkness, like, you know, climbing wall. Like, it gave me where, you know, I don't feel like I'm going to slip. I can manage, you know, it's always going to be a struggle, and I'm going to have to be conscious of things, but I have a foothold, and meditation is also that foothold.
Okay. Let's take like a few minutes and unpack each one of the things you mentioned, because I think Prozac works for both depression and anxiety, right?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how does Prozac make you feel?
Yeah. I have a physician's assistant, who prescribes, I think that's what she is, because when I was in the very darkest of dark, I knew I needed to get on prescription meds the next day. Like, that's how bad it was. And I knew, working in the mental health field, that you don't get a psychiatrist appointment for like 6 months, right? I mean, it can be, there are just not enough, especially in Oklahoma. And so luckily, one of my friends here who answers our referral line, she was like, you know, call Laureate, which is our mental health facility here in town. And I got basically, I think she's a physician's assistant, but I was in her office 3 days later and crying, falling apart. And I said, I don't know what I need, but I need something. And she was like, let's start on Prozac and go from there. And she walked me through the side effects and everything. And I, you know, because I'd never been on any kind of medication ever. You know, I was 39 and I'd never been on any medication, but I'd struggled this whole time. And I got on this medication. Prozac, I always explain to people, when I got Prozac and that day I walked away, I was like, oh, this is going to be like drinking a glass of wine and, you know, taking a bath. Maybe it'll help relax me, but this isn't the solution. And it's not the solution, but like I said, it's a foothold. And I remember like a week or two later, I remember the moment that I could feel, and this may be psychosomatic, but I can remember the moment the lights came on. Like, I could remember the whatever chemicals in my brain that had been sloshed to one side my entire life, finally sloshed to the other side. And it was like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like, you know? Like, wow. And it wasn't euphoria or anything. It was just like the lights came on and I wasn't in the dark. And it was, And that it came at the moment where I was most receptive to counseling and to meditation and to all the self-work. You know, Teresa, you were saying, talking about the self-work, and yeah, man, like I just tore through books and podcasts and talked to all my homies here, all my mental health professionals that I'm surrounded by, God bless them. And just how happy I feel. And it's not like my life was terrible. I mean, I have a beautiful wife. I have amazing children. I have this amazing life, a job I love, everything. You know, of course, we all have our trials and tribulations, but I finally feel happy.
And did medications help make it easier for racing thoughts to stop?
Yes. Yeah. Like I said, it was literally, I mean, it was night and day. I mean, to the point where I tried meditation I can remember trying it in high school and just being like, you know, having a swarm of mosquitoes in my head. Like, no, this is not for me. But it wasn't until I got on Prozac that my mind quieted down enough. Like the volume just turned down on life just enough to where I could. I mean, I took a meditation class. I read a billion books. I knew I was onto something because every book that I've ever read about self-help, there is some version of just stop, recognize what you're feeling,
yeah,
and then take a step instead of getting pulled into the vacuum of all of these horrible thoughts. You know, it's amazing. And I always tell people with meditation, because they're like, oh gosh, I got to go to school. You know, I got to go to classes. I got to read books. I need to shave my head. I need to, you know, go into a dark room. I need to wear robes. You know, I have to become Buddhist. And it's like, no. What I always say is, all you have to do is count to 10. And they're like, what? And you go, so my thing, and this is what I do. You take a breath in. And when you let it out, you count one. You take a deep breath in. You let it out and you count two, and you do that to 10, and then you start over. That is meditation.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, dude, I'm going to try that later.
And yeah, you America can do it.
And I aren't good at meditating. We know this.
But Teresa, you actually said that, like you said singing a song or counting or things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's just something about taking a moment And the other thing, the greatest superpower that I have against my negative thoughts, it's kind of like, you know, in A Beautiful Mind, where at the end, the hero sees the embodiment of the voices that he was, or the people that he was hearing and seeing from his psychosis. And he sees them down the hall. He sees them. He knows they're there, but he just ignores them. And the power that he felt and that he was able to go on his journey to a much less, you know, I'm not saying like that's that I've experienced anything to that extent, but to the biggest thing, and this sounds super corny and cheesy, but it's your thoughts are not you. They're like clouds in the sky and you're watching them pass. And even if they are full of lightning and thunder and tornadoes, like that will pass and blue sky will come. So you can't identify, even like I feel bad for horrible things that I think about other people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh God, I'm such a horrible, foul person. But if I can catch myself and say, whoa, that wasn't me. That was just these thoughts that somehow are created. But I can stop and I could recognize them and say, that's not me.
Yeah.
They're just a thought and it will move on.
That is what being on the other side is like. You know, it takes a lifetime to figure out that when you have a relationship with your thoughts and you get on the other side, then it's not that your thoughts are controlling you. It's that you can look at your thoughts objectively and speak back to them and say, you know what, that what you're saying is not who I am and not me. Mm-hmm. And I like that you've provided a perspective where, you know, we all have racing thoughts. I think it's normal to have racing thoughts, but if you have a mental health problem and you have racing thoughts, it's okay to understand that you need medications or other options as a way to give yourself that boost because our brains are not in a space where they're capable of managing those negative thoughts, even with immense practice and effort, right? Because I think that causes people a lot of shame when they think, well, I've tried the meditation and I clearly can't do it. So something must be wrong with me. And it's such a negative frame. And if we can just understand that it's like any other illness and you need medications, that doesn't make you a bad person. It just, you know, it's what we do to get better and feel better. I appreciate your willingness to share that part of your story.
I appreciate the opportunity.
I wanted to just go back to one thing that Matt had said, you know, this idea, even if it was cheesy, sometimes we need cheese because, you know, we need something to hold on to, you know, where you have these cloudy kind of days and you think that they are not going to ever go away. Hopefully listening to us and hearing other people's stories and experiences around these issues help people understand that it's okay that this happens to you because you think that nobody else deals with these things. And it's not like we go out in our, you know, even if we work here in a space where it's very open, we're like, dude, you don't even know the types of thoughts I was having last night, you know? So it's just about being able to say, it's okay. Try to figure out what's happening because I think that's key. It does take work to get to a place of trying to feel at ease with the thoughts that are happening and knowing how to work around them. But I think everything that you shared really resonates with this idea that you're not alone when this is happening to you. It happens to most of us. We just don't talk about it openly.
Exactly. That's why I love the title of your podcast, man, In the Open.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way we do anything. Like, that's the, I mean, God bless you, really. I mean, it's these, we're in a new era with podcasts that you guys, people can tune into your show and they feel not alone because I felt alone so long. And it wasn't until I was surrounded by people who were like-minded that I finally felt I could talk in the open.
So, Matt, you come to us from a different podcast, Mental Health Download. Tell people how they can find you.
Oh, yeah. Well, everywhere that you enjoy In the Open podcast, you can find Mental Health Download. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, everywhere. There's a link actually on the main page of our website. It's mhaok.org. And you can scroll down a little bit and you can listen to the latest episode right there. So I'm just so happy to be on your show. This is, I was telling Teresa in America before we started, I've never been interviewed. This is so weird. I feel like I'm in therapy. I actually, like when we finished talking, I felt, you know, when you're in therapy and you kind of walk out and you feel a little lighter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I feel.
This is group therapy.
Yeah, for sure. It always helps Teresa and I to chat with one another. And we appreciate you spending time with us today, Matt.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
All right, Matt. You want to tell people what they should do?
Okay. Well, America, Teresa, thank you so much for letting me come on the show. And I just want to leave everybody with the words that I try to remember every single day here as we help people experiencing mental illness, homelessness, substance use, and people who are incarcerated because they have a mental illness. We must fight in the open. So everybody, go out and fight in the open.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Nice.